What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Fantasy Besties podcast here on the Razzball YouTube channel. Thank you, as always, to the Razzball team for hosting us over on the YouTube channel. And definitely check out the Razzball YouTube channel on Sundays. They do a live start sit show, which is hard to say. If you say that like over and over again, it's hard to say and it feels weird coming out. But you definitely got to check that out on a Sunday because they got that going. Bobby hosts that for a couple hours, right, leading right up into game time. So definitely 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern time. Check that out on a Sunday. You can find my written work on Razzball. I do the DFS article there. And as always, with me on Mondays, you can find me here with my fantasy besties. And today, we only have two of my four other besties here. We got Kevin Tompkins, and we got Loop, Jordan Loop. What's up, peeps? Say what's up.
What's up?
That was perfect. You said
it. That might have been the whitest thing I've ever done in my life on a stream on a Monday in October.
I don't know, Kev. Speaking of whitest thing, all right, can you, and I have to put Coop on blast here because I was at Coop's wedding this past weekend for anybody who's watching, and I had a nice little stream going, so check that out on my page. I did a stream of like, you got drunker and drunker. But yo, I didn't even tell you guys this yet. So I'm like 12 margaritas deep. I'm like feeling myself. I'm like crushing the dance floor all night, right? Now Blink 182 comes on and, you know, I'm jumping around and dancing. Coop comes over and he's like, yo, you are not allowed to dance to white music. Get out. And he literally threw me out of his wedding.
Is that what that picture of you and Reyna was?
Yes. I was standing outside with a sad face going, Coop literally just kicked me out of his wedding and said I couldn't dance to white music. What the fuck?
Well, that'll teach you. I mean, come on, man.
Not cool, but it was a good time. And I got to meet Auntie Coop. I got to meet Coop's father. It was great people, man. And Pemba was there, our friend DJ, and Joe Cardellano, a lot of people that like we've talked about on here and Coop talks about a lot. Like I got to actually like meet them. We interact on Twitter. So it was cool and missed you guys there. Wish you were there. And Coop is recovering. He got back today. It was cool. It was at like a little campground thing, which is perfect for Coop. We know like Coop lives like he's in camp, right? So he just got back today. He's wrapping up his stuff. So we're going to go on without him. Linda's got some stuff going on, too. She may or may not hop in here. That's right, Scampers. But we're going to start this thing off, as we always do, with a first down. So, Kev, I'm going to let you do your first down first. What is the thing you want to start the show off with?
Yeah. So if you guys pay attention, like I write the Target Report on Fantasy Alarm on Thursdays, a lot of information. It's you got to scroll through it. But anyway, I typically write about the Colts that they are a very condensed pass offense. That usually is Pittman and everybody else getting scraps, whether it's Pierce Campbell, Alec Pierce, Jelani Woods, Granson, Moelle Cox, et cetera, et cetera. So, in a weird twist of fate, the Colts absolutely just did the opposite of what they've been normally doing. Normally they're a slow paced, offense. The Colts went no huddle on 47% of their plays. The third highest no huddle rate of any team in any game this season, the top two being both the Cardinals at 53 and 55%. They are fastest snap pace, most plays they've run, 74. And by far the most points that they scored, three guys had over 10 targets, Deion Jackson, Paris Campbell, and Michael Pittman with 16. I mean, Pittman is clearly the wide receiver one here, but I don't know if this is just a blip because this game was faster paced with the Jaguars and it did come down. You know, they beat him, I believe, 34-27. But if this offense is going to at least be more rapid pace than the glacier pace they were pretty much running for the past 2 years, it doesn't even matter who the quarterback was, whether it's Carson Wentz or the corpse of Matt Ryan, but maybe Matt Ryan has a little more juice in him, especially if they're going to be running their offense like this. So that was something that definitely stuck out to me. And all those stats were per Pat Thorman, who put out a great tweet yesterday afternoon about the Colts just completely flipping the script. So that was one thing that jumped out to me.
So, Kev, you think Frank Reich sees that and goes, all right, this is the way that we win games. We're going to stick with this. Or do you think it was just like a one-time thing based on the situation?
I mean, they've got the guy. I mean, they've been talking about Paris Campbell for the last, you know, half decade now, but you know, Pitt, they've got some weapons. It's just a matter of how they want to use them. And if this is just a reaction to not having, you know, Jonathan Taylor and having a full week of game planning to be able to implement something like this, I mean, we'll see if Taylor is not able to go, or even if Taylor is more limited, you know, we'll see what happens there. But I would hope that they would at least just turn up the juice just a little bit, because otherwise it's still a Pittman and the rest, but at least we know the other guys have a pulse, and if they're going to run more high tempo with their offense, that these guys can produce. And I mean, we see, I mean, who saw Deion Jackson pretty much becoming the second coming of Christian McCaffrey? Like, certainly I did not. So, I mean, we'll see what happens, but at least we know that they have that capability of being able to run an offense from this century.
Yeah, and it would be nice to see. I hope it continues, because, you know, we have our Alec Pierce shares, especially anybody who went out and picked him up after you told them to last week. Anybody that had him before, you know, both of us, we've talked about it in the preseason. All of us have, about, you know, him being one of those late round guys. So I'm sure a lot of people that listen to us do have him there. So it would be nice to see some more volume out of that offense.
Yeah, and he caught a touchdown too, so perfect. I mean,
save the day.
71% of routes. I mean, they're going up just a little bit. I mean, I said in there last week that he is the closest thing that the Colts have to a wide receiver too. So, I mean, we just hope that this is a trend that just keeps going.
Yes, sir. What about you, Luke?
Yeah, I was excited to see the 49ers pass catchers have a nice day yesterday. So it's very, very rare that you'll see three different guys in that offense to have double-digit targets, and that's what we saw yesterday. So it was the big three: Debo, Ayuk, and Kittle, all had double-digit targets. They all had 7 to 8 catches, and they had between 79 and 83 yards. So it was spread around very evenly between those three guys. It was Ayuk who ended up with both of those touchdowns. So if you were streaming him, putting him in a flex there on your bye week or something, that really paid off for you. I've been a big Ayuk guy for a long time, so it's nice to see that he's not just forgotten in that offense. Unfortunately, I don't think that's a trend that we will see continue. It came at the detriment of the run game, and it was not a winning formula as they lost to the Falcons. So I think it was just a scenario where they got behind, they had to throw, and you know, those guys all three had a nice day. But I wouldn't count on that every week. I say more often than not, you're going to have two of those guys maybe that are startable in fantasy week to week, and probably Ayuk is going to be the guy that more of just a flex guy that you don't know what he's going to get every single week. But it was nice to see for 1 week there.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see if the usage for Kittle continues, right? Like, because the last, obviously he's had some injury concerns, but he's been blocking a lot more this year than we would like to see anybody that has him on their team. So I'd like to see if that usage continues, if you see him continue to get involved. You know, like you said, it did kind of take away from the run game, which is usually their staple, but I think that game just got away from them. You know, I thought that game script was going to go the opposite. In fact, I was recommending Jeff Wilson, thinking they were going to be playing from ahead. He was going to have plenty of volume, but that game just got away quickly. And you know, we'll talk a little bit more about Atlanta later, but I mean, I think that was the case. And I'm curious to see if the trend continues, or if, like you said, it was just something that happened this week. But I know you're an Ayuk guy, so I knew you were happy about that one. Mine is just that the Bucs are not the dominant team that you thought they were. You know, obviously losing to that Pittsburgh team who was decimated in the secondary, who lost their starting quarterback and then had to put Mitch Trubisky in there. Oh, hi, Joey, right? What's up, buddy?
Oh, hi.
But yeah, that Bucs team is not the team that you expected coming in. You know, everybody wants to point to Tom Brady not, you know, being there on Saturday because he went to Robert Kraft's wedding and he's not a team player and whatever. Like, I'm sure that's a part of it. Like, they're not meshing and they're not gelling as that unit that you'd like a championship team. But they're not that great, man. The offensive line, obviously, we know about all the shuffling they had there. So the offensive line is a question mark. The secondary is a question mark. I mean, we couldn't get off the field. At the end of the game, you had an opportunity to stop Mitchell Trubisky and Chase Claypool, and you couldn't get off the field. Like, that can't happen. That can't happen. So, I mean, with all those woes, this could very easily be a very average 9-8 team. You know, they have a bounce back game against the Panthers coming up next week. But then they get the Ravens, the Rams, and the Seahawks. Then they get the Browns and the Saints. Then they get the Niners, the Bengals, the Cardinals, and then they finish with Carolina and Atlanta, which is end of the season, divisional games. You never know what could happen there. So this could be a very average 9-8 type of team if they don't get their shit together quickly. And Atlanta is actually, like, playing decent football. Like, yeah, Carolina's whatever. New Orleans has been beaten up. Maybe they get healthier and try to make a run. So this division could be up in the air. And honestly, if Tampa played it in a more competitive division, in a different division, they might have trouble. They might not be the favorite. I still think they're the favorite to come out of this division, even as a mediocre team or, you know, a less than expected team. But it's just because of what's around them. I don't think it's because they're good. I think it's because the teams around them aren't that good either. What do you guys think?
Like, So the thing with, like, these old quarterbacks now, like, Tampa Bay is looking suspect. Green Bay is looking suspect. The Rams are looking suspect. Like, I don't know if it's just they all, you know, didn't pay their AARP bills and they're coming up, they're overdue or what, but, like, it's right now, it's like the Eagles and, you know, the rest right now in the NFC. They are the clear betting favorite in the NFC right now to go to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, it's still, you know, we're getting into week 7. There's a lot of time. I think, you know, clearly these ships can get righted, but it's not a good look, at least right now, to see, you know, teams like the Buccaneers that can't even get past, you know, Kenny Pickett left the game with a concussion. We'll talk about that. And then with Trubisky, they still could not get over that hump. And then Green Bay losing to the Jets. Like, we'll talk about that. And then, yeah, and then Stafford just has not looked comfortable all year. I mean, if that's any indication of his throwing shoulder, we'll see. But it's a weird NFC right now. Like, usually the NFC has like 3 or 4 strong teams. We thought San Francisco was a strong team. Then they go out and lose to the Atlanta Service Academy. So it's just a weird in the NFL, just in totality.
I almost wonder if it's kind of like a changing of the guard, right? Like, you mentioned these older quarterbacks, Brady, Stafford struggling, even your boy Rogers struggling a lot. Like, you wonder if it's like, all right, time for these guys to go out, the old guard's leaving, and here comes Jalen Hurts and Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, and, you know, that's what the league is now. Get out of here, old guys, we're moving on. But speaking of moving on, we have a bunch of running backs, guys, that came into this season almost as afterthoughts, second fiddles, guys that were technically backups or split back in the case of one of them. But most of these guys weren't even really thought of when you talk about, you know, who's going to be my starting running back in my fantasy football league. Like, if I'm going to go out there in week 6, who's going to be my starter in my RB2 slot? It wasn't these guys. These weren't the guys you thought about. But there was 5 of them that had really good weeks, scored double-digit fantasy points. And I'm curious. We're going to play a little game of backup running back trick-or-treat. So I'm going to give you the first one here. Ramondre Stevenson came into the season as a split back with Damian Harris. Now Damian Harris is injured, but Ramondre looks good. He put up 25.1 fantasy points in a PPR league yesterday. Ramondre Stevenson, guys, trick-or-treat. I thought so. I think that this guy has all the opportunity in the world, and he looks great. Luke, tell me why you think he's a treat.
The biggest thing for me was just how big a part of the offense that he was yesterday. Now, I know that Damian Harris was out, but typically in the past, and with the Patriots and Belichick, they just would put another guy in there. They wouldn't just give a guy a bell cow workload just because another guy is out there. Normally there would be, you know, we thought we might see more Pierre Strong or some of these guys, but it was just overwhelmingly Ramondre yesterday. So now Damian Harris is going to be back, and I'm sure that it's going to be some type of a split, but I think that Stevenson has shown enough, and he's just more dynamic, and he adds an element to that offense that Harris just doesn't have. So I think that Stevenson probably will be the 1A to the 1B of Harris. But yeah, it's just like I said, it's just the element that Harris doesn't seem to have. It's just excitement and just adds a little bit more explosiveness. So
exactly. Kev, were you able to grab him at all in your zero RB builds?
Yeah, I got him in quite a few. I mean, that was the whole thesis behind, you know, drafting Ramondre, is that eventually he overtakes Damian Harris. Damian Harris is always going to have, if healthy, a standalone role, but Ramondre provided, you know, especially when they cut James White retired, especially with him retiring, that opened up the receiving portion that Damian Harris has never profiled as being able to carry that part of that game. Ramondre, at least at week six, I mean, he 86% of the snaps. Kevin Harris and Pierre Strong were not factors one bit. So that bodes very well for him. I mean, they did run empty and run more two tight end and, you know, three wide receivers and all that. And Ramondre was out there blocking, but I mean, I liken Ramondre and Damian right now, if Damian's healthy, to like where we were with Javonte and Melvin Gordon, like right before Javonte was injured, like 65-35, and Damian Harris is probably going to be siphoning some touchdowns from Stevenson should they get into the red zone and get into the green zone. But by and large, Ramondre is going to be at least the compiler as far as, you know, everything else, and then added the receiving role. Yeah, he's looking like at least a mid-tier RB2 with obvious contingent value if Damian Harris misses more time. Like, I don't foresee any other running backs getting into this mix. You know, with Kevin, I feel like if Belichick had such a strong inclination to play any of these other guys, they would have had more of a role than, I mean, Kevin Harris played 18% of snaps or 17% of snaps. So, and that was pretty much off of their practice squad. So, very bullish on Ramondre going forward. It's only going to, look better, I think, as we started getting into, you know, nut up time, and then we're starting to get Mac Jones back, to where this offense can normally run. But yeah, definitely wheels up on Ramondre.
Yeah, and I agree with both of you. I do think that Harris does come back and have a role, but I do think it's going to be a split, with Ramondre getting the larger portion of that split, maybe even to the tune of like a 70-30 type of split, where Harris will get that between the 20s, you know, get that six-yard run type of work. But Ramondre is going to be the one that's in there on third downs, in the red zone. You know, he's going to get those quality touches, and that's why I think he's definitely going to be a fantasy treat for us. He was the RB2 so far this week. Now, we still got one more game to play. There's still good backs tonight, but he was the RB2 going into tonight's game for the week. The RB1, guys, you mentioned it before, Kev, Deion Jackson. Deion Jackson put up 28.1 fantasy points in a PPR. Is this a trick or is he a treat? Okay, I'm going to let you guys go first then, and I'll tell you why I think he's a treat. And I, go ahead, Kev. Tell us why you think he's a trick.
Because Jonathan Taylor exists and Nyheim Hines exists. I don't see Deion Jackson being able to carve out any sort of workload outside of injury for any of those top two guys. So while it's great, and you know, he's clearly a zero RB winner, if you needed a running back and picked him up, I just don't think that he carves out any sort of meaningful role without an injury like that. I mean, he's a guy that maybe you stash like in the vein of like a Dearness Johnson, but that's probably, I just can't see any role for him.
Loop, you agree? Is that the same reason why?
What he said.
So I will agree with the first half of your statement, Kev. I think
I had him in the first half.
Yeah, and I think that you're absolutely right. Jonathan Taylor exists, so he's not going to be this, you know, every down workhorse type of back like he was before he got injured this week. But then you said Nyheim Hines exists, and I think this guy could be better than Nyheim Hines. Nyheim Hines has done nothing this year. He's done nothing but tell us he doesn't care about our fantasy team, right? Like, that's been the highlight of his season, and that's been the most we've talked about this guy on Twitter.
Is that him or Frank Reich, though?
I think it's him. I think it's him, and I think that this guy just showed that he could play that role. You know, he came in here and caught 10 passes this week. He got 10 targets, caught 10 passes. He showed he can play that receiving role, and he could run between the tackles. So he can kind of be the better version of Nyheim Hines. Like, yes, it will still be Jonathan Taylor's backfield. But when you mix in that change of pace back and you get a guy who can catch passes out of the backfield and can run the ball between the tackle, now you might have a little bit more of an element of surprise to the opposing defenses, where when you get Nyheim Hines and they're like, oh, okay, pass and play. Right? Like, he's not a guy you're worrying about running the football. This guy could come in and be a better version of Nyheim Hines. I think you just got him as a free agent off the wire. I mean, some people didn't even believe this week that he was going to continue to get the role. Like, you thought Jonathan Taylor was coming back. So some people might have just got this guy for free on, like, Saturday morning. So, you know, he could have still been out there in your leagues. You could have scooped him up for literally nothing. And even if he assumes that Nyheim Hines role and not taking over a backfield, obviously, with Jonathan Taylor in it, I think that's a fantasy treat for you right there. That could be a flexible player, especially while we're hitting these bye weeks. So while I don't think he's going to be this RB1 upside every week, I do think he has value in a PPR league that he is still worth being a little bit of a treat. So that's why I called him a treat. Next guy. This is another guy that is still on waiver wires. I still see him in half of my league's waiver wires. But he scored 19.7 fantasy points in the PPR league this week. Kenyon Drake, fellas. Fantasy trick or fantasy treat? Trick load of kids. So we're all in agreement there that that's a trick. And I think a lot of that is going to be based off of what we hear in the Kevin Tompkins injury report later about J.K. Dobbins. I think the injury to Dobbins and his knee kind of being an issue again was the reason why we saw more Kenyon Drake than usual this week. I don't think that continues. I do think he's a good handcuff to have in place, but I don't expect to see this production that we saw this week every week. What about you, Kev?
Yeah, like, I will be the first one to admit this, because I've always thought that Kenny Drake was just a bag of bones and just was on the path to the glue factory. But Kenny Drake actually had some juice, and I don't know if that's just in comparison to J.K. Dobbins, who just looked like he was riding the airport escalator thing and just standing still. But yeah, keep in mind, this is a dude, J.K. Dobbins, that was coming off an ACL, LCL, meniscus, and hamstring tear in the preseason last year. So it really should have taken more time to be able to kind of let everything set, work on it, you know, in practices and stuff like that. I mean, they took him out at the first sign of like tightness there in his knee. So that's, you know, kind of prudent on the Ravens to do that. And not only that, Gus Edwards is set to come back soon. The reason that this running, I mean, Kenny Drake was able to do this 19.7 fantasy points, but, you know, J.K. Dobbins could only see like a 40% snap share of this offense last couple weeks. He's what never got over 50%. Like, they still want to run all these running backs, and then the Ravens play the substitution game like they do with every position besides like Mark Andrews. So, I mean, I don't know if that's the full reason why I'm in on or out on Kenyon Drake as far as the Dobbins injury, but I think that just them wanting to mix in more of these running backs and then Gus Edwards being back plays into that as well.
Yeah, Loop, you were nodding in agreement to Scamper's comment up there about it being an icky situation. Is that why you think it's a trick?
We've seen this before, right? Look at last year. We had Tyson Williams, and everybody's running to the waiver wire to pick him up. He's the guy now, right? And then you had Devontae Freeman. They picked up off the street, and here he comes in. So it's really just they need a guy to get the work. Dobbins went out. It was Kenyon Drake or Mike Davis. So, I mean, what are you going to do there? You know? But he mentioned, you know, Dobbins. We'll see what that is. I think it was more of just being careful, being cautious with his injury. But Gus Edwards coming back, Justice Hill is still in that backfield. So it's not like, oh, here we go. Gus Edwards is not coming back and Dobbins is out for the season and Drake is the only guy left. There are other guys in this backfield that are going to return. I'll be very surprised if Drake gets this type of workload again once the other guys are back in the backfield. So that would make him a trick for me, and it it is just kind of an ugly situation because you don't know week to week who is going to be the guy that gets the work, and if they're going to be this quick to pull Dobbins at the first sign of tightness in his knee or whatever it was, then he's going to be difficult to trust as well. So I wouldn't jumping to start any guy out of this backfield, but if Dobbins is the full go, then it's hard to bench him. So
yeah, and I like them proceeding with caution with Dobbins. This is a team that has playoff Super Bowl aspirations, so you don't want to risk your star running back going down in week six with an injury if you can preserve him for later in the season. So I think that had there not been a return of Gus Edwards imminent, then maybe Kenyon Drake might be more of a treat. But I agree, it's a trick because you can't predict this team. You can't predict this backfield. And there's too many mouths to feed there that we don't know what's going to happen on a week-in, week-out basis. So if you need running back depth, sure, you could pick them up and see what happens. If Dobbins does, you know, end up missing some significant time at some point this year, it could end up being a guy you could flex in a bye week. But I think it's more of a trick also. One guy who also had 19 fantasy points, he had 19 exactly in a PPR, also had a late-game touchdown like we talked about with Ramondre also. Ken Walker, guys. Ken Walker took over the reins in Seattle. Obviously, poured one out for Penny last week. But it's Walker's backfield now. We didn't know if we were going to see a mix of any of the other backs in there. But, guys, Ken Walker was the one who dominated things in the backfield. Fantasy trick or fantasy treat?
He's both.
All right, tell us why you're floundering, Kev.
Look, the production was fine, 97 yards and a touchdown, a few catches, a couple catches, I should say. He was there on 70% of snaps, but he's still splitting with DJ Dallas in the receiving game. So, you know, I want to see Ken Walker be able to ramp up on the receiving game. The fact that he's splitting with DJ Dallas, at least, I mean, DJ Dallas had 32% of the routes, so that is a bit concerning. I'm not going to anoint him as like an RB1 anytime soon, because we saw Seattle have that, you know, other shoe dropping game, the game that, you know, Arizona completely bungled this game. I mean, this is a game where they should have been able to just get out, in front of Seattle's defense and, you know, that game just turning into a shootout, and it didn't happen. It was a 19-9 kind of defensive slugfest. I don't even know if you can call it defensive slugfest. It was more like an offensive ineptitude game, yeah. For the most part. But yeah, so I mean, to buy fully in on Seattle, like, let's not remember where, or let's not forget what we were thinking of Seattle before the season. Like, I don't think Gus or Geno Smith turned into like Peyton Manning anytime soon. I don't think that's happening, but I think he's going to have enough games where, you know, they score some points and Ken Walker is able to, you know, take advantage of the defensive attention that's going into Metcalf and Lockett and the passing game. I just don't think that's very going to be consistent. So I like Walker. I like Walker as a player. I'm just very hesitant on just anointing him as like a low-end RB1 right now. I think he's still got some work to do to be able to get into that, to even get into like high RB2 consideration for me. So right now he's just kind of – you got to start him because he's getting volume. But until we see the routes come up and until we see, you know, this offense, you know, being more consistent, I mean, you can't always rely on just these wild game script games like they have with the Lions, like they have with the Saints. So that's he's a trick and a treat for me. I like what I've seen, but we got to see more before we anoint him.
Okay. Loop, you are more definitive with your answer. You think he's a fantasy treat. Why?
Yeah, I mean, in a league where running back by committee is more of the norm, you don't see running backs out touch their backfield mates 23-2 like what Walker did yesterday. So I mean, even though that DJ Dallas was out there and he was running routes, he still wasn't a factor at all in the passing game. He got what, 2 carries for 1 yard, 1 yard in the run game. So this is as much of a bell cow type role as you're going to get from a backfield and the way the league is now. So you got to just chase that volume. And like Kev said, if you have him, you know, you are ecstatic that you waited it out, or if you were somehow able to get him on waivers last week, you have to be encouraged with the usage that you saw in the first game without Rashad Penny. So to me, he's an every week starter. No, he may not be an RB1 for you, but if he's your RB2, I think you're very happy moving forward.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that that's exactly where I'll put him firmly for, the foreseeable future, at least, as an RB2, as a strong RB2. And Kev, you make a great point with the amount of routes that DJ Dallas ran. But to Loop's point, they were useless routes. They were pretty much used as, let's get Walker a break. You go out there and all exercise team yourself, run around while we throw to, Lockett or Metcalf or whoever else, while we save Walker's energy because we're not passing to our running back anyway. We're going to throw to one of our receivers. So, I do think that I would be a little less bullish if DJ Dallas's role was one where he caught four passes, caught five passes, caught six passes on those targets, but he didn't. It was just kind of like, all right, you go run around while Walker takes a sip of water and then Walker's back out there. So I am encouraged that, the backfield is featuring him. And like Loop said, it, this day and age, in this economy, as you like to say, Kev, Ken Walker's an RB2, so he's a treat for me. Before I get into the last one, because the last one's going to be quick, Bill makes a good point here in the comments. Bill said, Miami's O-line looked brutal against my Vikes yesterday, thinking it's time to part with Mostert. The O-line did look brutal, but Bill, who would you be parting with Mostert for? Like, are you going to go out and pick up Kenyon Drake for Mostert? Because I wouldn't recommend that. So it all depends on what you got out there. If you got, Ken Walker to pick up, then by all means, go for it. But I wouldn't just drop him for nothing. I do like the workload there for Mostert as well. Last one I want to talk about, guys, in the trick-or-treat segment, and it should be a quick one, Daryl Henderson. He had 13.2 fantasy points yesterday. We don't really know what's going on with Cam Akers. All we know is that, he may not ever be back with this team again, and he wasn't active, so it was Henderson's backfield. You guys think he's a trick, or do you think that he's going to be a treat the rest of this year? Okay. All right. So then I'll go first because I'm a Henderson guy, and I had been a Henderson guy since last year, and everybody, was giving me crap about it. So I just don't think he has the burst that you talked about with Ramondre before, Loop. I didn't see it, and I think they have other guys that could be coming into the mix to try to give them that burst because this offense hasn't looked good. You talked about that a little earlier too, Kev, about how, Stafford hasn't looked good and it might be issues with his arm. So if that's the case, they want to lean on the run game. And I don't know that Daryl Henderson has the juice to be that. Kyren Williams is coming back from the IR soon, I believe. So that's a guy who you might want to pick up and stash as a guy who they might put in there. Malcolm Brown is nothing that really scares you away, but you saw it last year. He was taking some red zone work away. So I just don't think there's enough juice for him to be a fantasy treat for me. What do you think, Kev?
Yeah, the things that I was talking about with Ken Walker, at least Darrell Henderson has, where he has a receiving role in this offense. If we've seen him, show out in that facet of his game. I mean, he ran 71% of the snaps, 60% of the routes. Ronnie Rivers and Malcolm Brown were non-factors in that offense and should continue to not be. Kyren Williams is a little bit of a thorn in his side and that he could potentially work his way into a meaningful role. I don't know about a fantasy role, but I still think that as long as, if Akers is not going to be in the future of this team and they're shopping him right now, that at least Henderson right now has a shot. If the Rams turn this around and they're back to, Rams football, what we know, then Darrell Henderson is going to be a big part of that. And just the fact that if Stafford gets right, we know Cooper Kupp is, universally independent of any problems that the team could ever have, with his production. We got to worry about Allen Robinson, Skowronek, Tyler Higbee. As if these guys get right and Stafford gets right, then it's only going to benefit Darrell Henderson. I'm willing to at least seed, that maybe Stafford was on a pretty big heater last year, but I still think he's a quality quarterback. So it all hinges on the Rams getting back to what they do best and then you know, I think Henderson comes along for the ride.
And Loop, you agree?
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, the way that this offense looks right now, I would say this is more the floor for Henderson than it is the ceiling. So I think there's definitely room to grow. There's going to be, you know, hopefully more scoring opportunities as a whole for the offense once they, you know, get back to get right. And even if they don't, what you saw yesterday is still, like I said, kind of the floor. That's just the low expectation that you would have, even if they don't get right. So assuming that they do progress, you know, offensively, then like Kev said, Henderson comes along for the ride. I'm not huge on Kyren Williams. Maybe he will take a role, but I would see him eating into Malcolm Brown before he would eat into Daryl Henderson. So, you know, if you drafted Henderson and you knew that from week six on, Cam Akers was not going to be on the team, you would be absolutely ecstatic that you had Daryl Henderson.
You didn't draft him in like the fifth or sixth round.
I mean, you think where that value would have been in the offseason had you known that. So, you know, I just think that, no, he may not be and, you know, a league winning type running back, but he is definitely a guy that you can put in your lineups week to week. So, you know, that makes him a treat for me.
All right. Hey, good answers from both of you guys. And just to circle back to Bill there, Bill says he's got Stevenson, Hall, Pierce, Connor, and B-Rob, and he could grab Juju if he parts with Mostert. That I would do. I mean, that running back stable is pretty solid. So
yeah, it sounds deep. I think Yeah, you sound pretty deep. So I would just, you know, clearly Mostert, you don't really need him. I'm assuming it's, you know, 10 teams. So guys like Mostert should probably be out there. Yeah, I'd go get Juju. We saw this is his best game by far in week six, and I'm willing to see side with the Chiefs offense being able to support more guys than Travis Kelce, and we saw him support Juju last week. So going forward, I'm definitely in on him over Mostert.
There you go, Bill. Juju on that beat, buddy. Keep your science handy, guys, because this one I'm going to do a little rapid fire. So I want to know, there's a bunch of teams out there now that are sitting at that 500 mark, and even some surprising teams that are above 500. I'm curious if you guys think these teams are tricks or if they're treats. Okay, so we're going to go through them. I'm going to kind of go one at a time. We won't go into detail on them. Just, you know, I'll give you the team. I'll give you their record. Hold up, trick or treat. We'll move on to the next one. And then at the end, we'll circle back and we'll say, okay, which of these do you think are playoff teams? Okay. So the first surprising above 500 team is the New York Jets at 4-2. Trick or treat, guys. Okay, that's two tricks and a treat. Kev, we're coming back to that one. Team you mentioned earlier, Kev, the Indianapolis Colts are 3-2-1. Are they a trick or are they a treat? Oh, Kev, you're the odd man,
bro. I'm Skip Bayless, apparently.
Back to New York. The New York Football Giants are 5-1. Who would have thunk it? Are they tricks or are they treats?
I'm sitting on the fence.
Yeah, that's a tough one. That's a tough one. The Dallas Cowboys are sitting at 4-2 in the same division as the Giants. Are they a trick or are they a treat? All right, we're all in agreement there. Even though they took the L yesterday, they still showed some heart and they're getting their quarterback back. So I think we're all in agreement on that one. How about the 5-1 Minnesota Vikings? Who would have saw that coming, 5-1? Are they tricks or are they treats? All right, Kev, oddball once again.
Yeah.
Speaking of oddball and you, Kev, it's your Packers at 3-3. Bet you didn't see that one coming. Are they tricks or are they treats?
I did see it coming.
All in agreement there. What about a surprising 3-3 Marcus Mariota led Atlanta Falcons?
I could not put this up fast enough.
All in agreement on that one. And lastly, Kev, since your 3-3 Packers were in there, I guess we'll put my 3-3 Bucks in there. Are they tricks or are they treats? I'll take a page out of your book, Kev. Okay. See, and I like your guys' optimism, and I appreciate that. I guess as a Bucks fan, all the years of suffering and then just seeing things that I don't like in the secondary and on the O-line. Again, I think the division is bad enough that we'll still win it. So I guess that's why you can call them a treat, but they're kind of a smokescreen for what you expect of them. So of this list, before we go into who's going to be a playoff team, Kev, the first couple of ones you were different than us on. So give us quick thoughts on Jets and Colts.
The Colts are a team that I just think is like the Titans. They're like smoke and mirrors. I just can't see Matt Ryan being able to propel his team into the playoffs, no matter how good their defense is and no matter how good Jonathan Taylor is. So I do think that they're one of those fringy wildcard teams. I just don't know if they're going to be a playoff team. Like they don't seem to rise up against the good teams and play down to the bad teams. So that's where I'm at with the Colts. And then with the Jets, I mean, it's a young man's game right now. They had a fantastic draft, and now we're already seeing, the Breece Halls and Sauce Gardners, and then Quinnen Williams finally putting a game together against the Packers and was just an unstoppable force against one of the worst interior offensive lines in the NFL with the Packers. So I liked it. I mean, say what you want about game manager Zach Wilson, but, you know, if they had Joe Flacco, like, lock him into the playoffs right now.
And I kind of agree with that, Kev. I kind of agree with that. And the reason why I call them a trick is because I don't think that Wilson can get them over the hump. I don't think they have enough in the passing game to get them over the hump. They might be a fringe wild card team like you talked about Indy because that AFC is kind of, you know, up in the air. But I think that, you know, Miami's a better team than them in the division, will win the division. Buffalo obviously going to win the division, but Miami's also a better team than the Jets. So, like, they have a tough schedule in their own division. So I think that it's just going to end up getting to them at the end. They're just not going to have enough with Wilson not able to get a passing game going. On the opposite side of things, I think the Colts, with the defense that you mentioned, with Jonathan Taylor coming back healthy, can win their division because that's an up-in-the-air division. You know, you talked about the Titans. You don't know what you're going to get from the Titans. I don't think they're very good. The Jaguars, you'd love for them to be good, but that's the Jekyll and Hyde team. They come out one week putting it up and the next week just laying an egg. So I think that because the same thing as the Bucks, right? Their division is bad enough that they could be mediocre enough to win their division. So that's why I think they're a little bit of a treat. So, Luke, talk about the Giants. Talk about the 5-1 Giants, Luke. I personally called them a treat because I think that they already have this edge being 5-1, and they have a pretty favorable schedule ahead of them. So I think they could be a wild card team, even though they won't pass Philly for the division. Tell me why you think, what your thoughts are on the Giants.
It's hard to put it into words, really. Here's what I'll say.
The 2022 New York Giants, that's the tagline. It's hard to put it into words.
I don't know if you guys saw it earlier in the week. There was a video that was going around, and someone was saying that the Giants really have done themselves a disservice by getting out to this 5-1 record. And, well, it was 4-1 at the time, but when in all likelihood, they're not going to be able to make a run and actually compete for a championship. Even if they make it into the playoffs as a wild card team, it's hard to see them moving forward, right? So, and the premise was if you ain't first, you might as well be last. That's, so you might as well stock up your draft picks. You might as, you know, if you're not going to win a championship, what good does it do you to pick 24th in the draft, right? So for me, I think it's possible that now with a 5-1 record, they've given themselves a cushion to make the playoffs, but I just can't see them going much further than that. I think they make it, they go on the road and play one of these division winners, and and get knocked out and go home. Right. So Daniel Jones has looked pretty good, but I don't think he is a big time quarterback. I think that he will, I think that they're winning games more in spite of him than they are because of him. I think with a better quarterback, then my opinion would change on them. The defense has looked pretty good. Barkley is back to being Barkley. They don't really have any pass catchers. They don't have anybody that really threatens a defense outside of Barkley. So I think when they get around to playing better teams, that offense is going to be shut down. So to me, I think they're more of a trick than anything. And, you know, it's nice for Giants fans, I guess, to see them being successful and nice to see them buying into the system and Brian Daboll looking like a competent head coach, unlike some of these other guys, one of whom we'll see tonight of these first year coaches that look like they're overwhelmed a little bit with their new duty. So, you know, I think in the long term, the Giants will be good. I just don't think that this year is the year that we're going to see it. So,
yeah. And Kev mentioned Brian Daboll in our group chat as a candidate for coach of the year. And I definitely,
he is coach of the year right now.
Yeah. With the job that he's doing there, I definitely think that he is in line for that award. And I do agree with you, Coop, Loop, that they're definitely going to be that playoff team that if they make it, they're going to get, you know, beaten in the first game and see you later. But like, to the people that say they're hurting themselves and losing draft picks or whatever, like, there's financial implications on making the playoffs too, as an organization and for some players. Like, as an organization, you're selling playoff tickets. You're bringing, you know, momentum to your team by being a playoff team. There might be even financial, you know, bonuses for the team and for players for making the playoffs. So like, you're not going to lose games to get a better draft pick. Like, that's just, this is the NFL, people. This isn't your fantasy football league.
Like, on the other side of the toke, on the other side of the coin, though, with if they get off to, you know, if they keep winning, like, now you've got to pay Saquon Barkley. Now you've got to pay Daniel Jones. So there's reverse financial incentives there, too, where, I mean, we're not advocating for teams to just go out there and lose on purpose. But you can kind of see the other side there where the unfortunate side of winning football games can negatively hamper your team. So that's kind of the other side of it. And it sucks, but, you know, we were all hoping that the Giants, you know, could find a quarterback in the 2023 draft, whether it's Stroud or, you know, all these other guys. But, you know, now at this point, they've either got to explain to their fan base why we let Daniel Jones go after a potential playoff run or going into the playoffs. Or, you know, now they've got to go through the next couple years of, oh, we signed Daniel Jones after one season, and now this is what we got. And then we're in a worse position.
Yep. Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's a lot. Go ahead.
And I'll say it reminds me of, and I saw this, someone else make this point, I'm not sure who today, but you look at the Washington football team a couple years ago. They went on a run, and they made the playoffs, and they won that division. And it cost them the opportunity to get a quarterback. And so now they're back to spinning their wheels and right back now to Taylor Heineke. So it's just sometimes that one season of making it to the playoffs is just not worth it long term. So I understand the point both ways. You're obviously not going to go out there and tell the guys, hey, let's just lay down and lose. But at the same time, you have to look at realistically from the outside looking in that it may not be in the best interest to make the playoffs this year. But
yeah. And a lot of people might be wondering, why did you just mention Taylor Heineke? Taylor Heineke is not the starting quarterback, or is he? And that's why we'll take you to the Kevin Tompkins Injury Report.
Oh, yeah, that's right. The doctor is in. Kind of had to scramble there, not going to lie. But this is the Kevin Tompkins Injury Report. I am Kevin Tompkins, not a doctor. Marquise Brown, foot injury. this is the talk of Twitter pretty much all day. And of course, what we think led to the acquisition of Robbie Anderson to the Cardinals. It was fear that Brown couldn't miss the season with a potential re-injury of a to a Liz Frank injury that he suffered in 2020. X-rays did come back negative, but like it was deemed a small fracture in his foot. So he's likely going to miss upwards of 6 weeks here. So the Cardinals, like I said, did trade a sixth and seventh round pick for Robbie Anderson today. But you got to figure it's pretty big blow to an offense that was already sputtering. And now they will get DeAndre Hopkins back, but still it's Hopkins and Robbie Anderson and Rondale Moore and Zach Ertz. I mean, that looks a lot worse than having Marquise Brown. So we hope the timetable is short, but certainly a big blow to the Arizona Cardinals.
I'm surprised they spent the sixth and the seventh on Robbie Anderson. I mean, they probably could have sent the Kyler Murray game used cleat to them and they would have given him up. So
they could have sent like some digital codes for some, you know, weapon XP for Call of Duty.
Did you happen to see that the specialist, the doctor that he saw today was Dr. Robert Anderson?
Was it really?
No way.
Yeah. So Dr. Robbie, man, gets traded over and immediately is the one taking a look at Hollywood's God.
Footage, was it Robbie so, with a Y? Yeah. It should have been Robbie with a Y. That would have really brought it
closer. He was like, yo, he hurt. He ain't going to be here for a while, yo. I'm going to take his spot.
His press conference with the Panthers reporters, like just in front of the locker, like he just sounded like the most disinterested, would rather be anywhere else. I don't know if that's his personality. I can't really speak to that, but very telling. So
yeah, anyway. It was like your longtime head coach that was with you in college and you have this great relationship with
that's the guy that we're how do you feel about that temple
is what it is, man.
It is what it is. <It's>
All right.
Good Lord. We talked about J.K. Dobbins a little bit here. Was taken out of the game with, quote, knee tightness, unquote. Was held out pretty much the entirety of the second half. You know, keep in mind, like I said before, his he did tear his ACL, LCL, meniscus, and hamstring. So with caution, the Ravens removed him, and that's why Kenny Drake had the great day that he had in week six. So we'll see how this shapes up and whether they keep him out a week or two just to kind of be on the safe side. It's very fluid, so we will see what happens here. Kenny Pickett did lead the game with a concussion in that surprising Steelers-Buccaneers game. Mitch Trubisky did come in the third quarter to relieve him, enters concussion protocol. Again, fluid. We'll see what happens with that if he can play, you know, coming up in week seven. Cameron Brate, a very scary injury, left with was supposed a neck injury. Got him off the field in a stretcher, was released from the hospital in time to fly back with the rest of the Buccaneers, which is a very good sign, but could be held out in an abundance of caution. Could see Kate Otten work his way into more snaps, routes, etc. And then Carson Wentz, we know this happened on Thursday, but we have not been on the air. So this still counts. Carson Wentz did break his finger, finished the game. He is going to elect to have surgery on that finger. Will miss 4 to 6 weeks after seeing a specialist today. So Taylor Heinicke, who we talked about just a couple minutes ago, will likely step in as the Commander's starting quarterback for the time being. You know, it could be Taylor Heinicke. Could be somebody else that we might talk about too for you deep league stashes. So that is your Kevin Topkins injury report. Again, not a doctor. That's all I got.
But you did it, man. You're not a doctor, but you got all that info, bro. You got all that info that people want out of a guy with a drawn red cross on his hat.
Hey, you know how many years of medical school I had to get this? Zero.
0.0. But yeah, I mean, you mentioned Taylor Heinicke possibly being the starter, but maybe not for long. And I think that, you know, going right into waivers, a guy that I would stash is Sam Howell. If you're in a deep league or if you're in a super flex league, you got to figure this team, like Luke just talked about before, like they're in a pickle now where they don't know what's going on at the quarterback position because of that playoff berth a couple of years ago. So now Sam Howell's a guy that they might want to see what they got there. I mean, he looked good in North Carolina in college, but again, it's North Carolina, so you don't know how that's going to translate to the NFL. So they might want to get a look at him, especially with the three teams ahead of them in their division just looking so good. Like, let's face it, they're not going to make the playoffs, right? So let's see what we got in this kid. We're already a bad team. If this kid is our quarterback of the future, great. We use our high draft pick to put some weapons around him or strengthen the team elsewhere. If he's not the real deal, well, then, hey, maybe we can shore up that quarterback position in the next year's draft. So I think one way or another, they're going to want to get this kid out there, see what they got. So might be worth a stash in a deep league or a super flex league. Any big waiver targets for you, Kev?
I talked about Kenny Drake. It's more of a short-term ad, but I think if you need some running back production, if you had some of these guys that maybe are underperforming, like, and you need production right away, especially guys on buys. I mean, we're looking at what, Vikings, Bills. I'm blanking on the others, but I know there's some big teams there on buy. But yeah, Miles Sanders. Yeah, if you have any of those guys, you need running back production. Look to Kenyon Drake, who I don't know if he's going to be, especially with the ambiguity of J.K. Dobbins. So I think that plays into it. And I don't think Gus Edwards is going to be on the field in week 7 as well. So I do like him as a pickup. I do like also a couple Giants as well. Daniel Jones and Wandale Robinson. Wandale Robinson scored a touchdown. I think we'll see his routes come up a little bit more. It's a very ambiguous wide receiver group that we did talk about. Only ran 34% of the routes, but I think those are going to be coming up to the detriment of career dynasty end of bench guys like Marcus Johnson, Darius Slayton, the ghost of Richie James, et cetera, et cetera. So keep in mind, Wandale Robinson was the guy that they took ahead of George Pickens. So this is a guy they have in high regard. You know, people want to just call up a slot guy, but I think he's more than that. And I think he could clearly get it to the top of the heap as far as these Giants.
And he was he's the one that was handpicked by the new GM and the new head coach. These other guys that are there, the Kenny Galladay, obviously, Kadarius Toney, there's rumors that they're shopping him around. Those were left over from Gettleman days. So yep, right. Wandale was their guy that they picked. They took him in the second round. So, I think if his routes don't increase, I'll be very, very surprised. I think he's a great pickup if he's out there.
Yeah, I agree. Any other ones for you, Luke?
For me, it's more of a speculative, you kind of deep stash guys, but if Dante Foreman and Chuba Hubbard are out there, there's rumors that are heating up that CMC could be on the move, and the Panthers made it evident that they're willing to sell. They just shipped out Robbie Anderson today. So they're in a full rebuild. So if they can get some nice draft picks in return for CMC, they're going to take that. So, it's not going to be sexy, and it's, you know, these are not league winning type guys in that offense, but they're guys that you can stash if you need a spot start here or there. You may have a potential starting running back as early as the next couple of weeks. So,
yeah, the only thing I'm afraid of with that is I think their asking price is just so high. They want multiple firsts for CMC, and while CMC is great, I don't know that anyone's going to be willing to pay that much of a premium for him. So I like the idea, and I like the ad. You know, if you have room on the back of your bench, you want to stash these guys just in case it happens, hey, then you'll have a running back that you could throw in there, especially with the times, the economy the way it is now.
If it does happen and they're still out there, you're going to be bidding against everyone else in your league and having to blow your fab to do it. You can get them now for pretty much free, very cheap. If you got
get out ahead of the game,
stash them. Yep.
Exactly. Love it. Get out ahead of the game. The game's about to start, and it's another AFC West battle for the second week in a row. I know Loop is excited to watch Russ cook. What else are you looking forward to the most tonight, Loop?
Listen, my favorite thing is that the long national nightmare is almost over. This is the fourth time in 6 weeks that the Broncos have been in prime time, and they are not in prime time again until week 14 against the Chiefs. So we have a break, finally we can breathe easier just a little bit. But as far as the actual game itself, I just want to see if this Broncos offense as a whole can show any signs of life. So, yeah, I would like to see Russ cook a little bit, but, you know, the Chargers are more than likely going to put up points. The Broncos defense has played very, very well. Now, you have to give them that. But I think this offense for Los Angeles is going to put up some points. So if the Broncos want to stay in the game and have a chance to win it, they're going to have to do more than kick field goals, you know, which is what they did the last time that we saw them. So there are lots of weapons, lots of fantasy implications that you're looking for tonight with those receivers. I know that I have Sutton in a lot of places. I have Judy going in a few places and Melvin Gordon as well. So just want to see some signs of life. Yeah.
That would be nice. That would be nice. And I'd like to see him for Melvin Gordon because I'm a sucker for a storyline. And this is that Melvin Gordon revenge game. I want to see if he can capture some of that old Melvin Gordon now that he's a bell cow running back again. I wonder if he can capture the way that he was when he was a bell cow running back for the Chargers. I'm curious to see if he could step up with the emotion of this game, with the role that he now has, to bring some juice into this offense like you talked about, Loop. You know, we talk so much about Russell Wilson not cooking and, you know, oh, we want Sutton, we want Judy, we want these guys to get involved. You know, we also lost their starting running back. So now can Melvin Gordon take over this backfield and can that give them some juice? And that's what I'm looking forward to tonight. What about you, Kev?
Two words. Greg Dulcich.
Yeah! Oh my God, look at that hair. Oh my God. Oh my God, it's so beautiful.
Thank you. Oh my God, it's so beautiful. Yeah, Albert Okwuegbunam, he is a healthy scratch. The Broncos love to bring out the clunkiest of old model robots that love the block in Eric Tomlinson and Eric Saubert. So it'd be nice to have someone with a little receiving chops out there and a long flowing mane that I'm not totally jealous of. So yeah, it would be nice to see if Greg Dulcich can at least carve out a little bit of a receiving role. I mean, I'm not really expecting a lot as far as routes run considering it's his first pro game, but he can offer a dimension of this Broncos offense that, I mean, you're healthy scratching Albert Okwuegbunam and then you're running these other guys there. So I clearly think that they have a role set for him. It's just a matter of getting reps and getting work in. So Greg Dulcich, I'm very interested in seeing how the Broncos deploy him. If he can get a little run tonight, hopefully maybe 30-40% of the routes and then up from there.
Absolutely. I like it. And a lot of people might not even know who he is because he's been on the IR for the beginning of this season. So, you know, if your game started, so you probably can't do it now, but that's a guy you should have probably stashed because I think he does have a role in this offense, Kev. I think you're absolutely right there. Luke, give us your final thoughts. What do you want to say?
Yeah, just enjoy the game tonight if you can. I know that the Broncos make it very hard, but just know that it's almost over. So, but yeah.
Kev, final thoughts.
I just hope they all have fun. That seems evergreen, but yeah. So, I mean, the Yankees Guardians is tonight. My boy Jameson Taillon pitching tonight. You know, if they ever get that game going, it is currently in a rain delay. So it was supposed to start a little over an hour and 15 minutes ago. So, or a little bit a while ago. So yeah, whatever. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
I'll root for JMO for you because I know that's your boy, but I hope they lose the game. So hopefully he has a good outing. They pull him in the sixth and then the Guardians win the game. So sorry. That's where I'm leaning. I like to use my final thoughts to speak to something other than sports, other than football when I can. And just, you know, where I started the show was talking about Coop's wedding this past weekend. It was nice to see young love. It was nice to see a display of young love and hear their officiant talk about how they met, stories about, you know, their past and you know, just different funny things and how what they do for each other. And it was just nice to see it on display. So, you know, young love for the win is my final thoughts. So thank you for everybody for checking in here. Thank you for anyone who's come in on the chats for us. Definitely thank you for Razzball for hosting us here on the Razzball YouTube channel. definitely check out that Razzball YouTube channel. Check out the Fantasy Besties Twitter page. And definitely check out Razzball.com also, where you can find the audio of this show and all the other great tools that they have over there. So thanks again for tuning in. For Kevin, Linda, who's not here, Coop, who's not here, my man Loop, I'm JB Barry. We're the Fantasy Besties. Have a great week. We'll see you next Monday.
Greg Dulcich.